From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM Split Show for you. Later tonight, the mystery of Flight 370. Passover begins, of course, for those of you of the Jewish faith. I hope all goes well, and you have a very important religious holiday. Well, here we go again. It saddens me to report tonight that another coast-to-coast guest has died. Former Los Angeles police officer and narcotics investigator Michael Rupert, best known as an investigative journalist and peak oil awareness advocate, is dead. Now, details are kind of sketchy. Various sources and his Facebook page say that he committed suicide. He was merely 63 years old. In the mid-1990s, Rupert worked as a Los Angeles police officer in the narcotics division before he experienced firsthand what he says was government corruption. He uncovered evidence that pointed to the CIA being involved in drug dealing and would publicly confront the agency director, John Deutsch, during a town hall meeting. Deutsch did not handle the confrontation very well and was ultimately terminated from the CIA as a result. Now, after his time with the LAPD, Rupert went on to become an investigator and journalist, establishing a newsletter called From the Wilderness, a watchdog publication that exposed government corruption, including his experience with the CIA drug dealing activities. The newsletter would evolve into a website under the same name, covering vast range of conspiracy theories, including international politics, peak oil, civil liberties, drugs, economics, and the nature of the 9/11 conspiracy. He will be missed. His 2004 book, Crossing the Rubicon, is still available on Amazon.com. We will have a special tribute to Michael sometime during the Friday night show on Coast to Coast AM. He is about, I believe, the sixth guest now to die within the past several months. Unbelievable. Ron Paul appeared on Fox News to warn that the federal government could be planning to launch a Waco-style assault against Nevada cattle rancher Cliven Bundy, expressing hope from last week's events during which Bundy supporters faced down armed Bureau of Labor and Management agents and forced them to release Bundy's cattle, represented a new benchmark for Americans standing up against federal government intrusion. The former congressman suggested that it would be naive to think that the feds have simply thrown in the towel. Now, David Knight is an InfoWars nightly news anchor for Alex Jones. He was in attendance during most of the episodes that were occurring at the ranch. And let's check in with him now on this. David, first of all, give us a little wrap-up of what's going on here.
Well, George, there's a lot of different issues here. We've got jurisdictional issues that are going to kind of a competition between the states and the feds when they have differing laws, and we see this happening with marijuana legalization. That's the basis of his claim. Now, what happened about 20 years ago was that the BLM decided that they were going to cut back the ranchers' herds by about 90%, as well as cutting the most valuable times of the years that they could be on the range. Now, ask yourself, if you've got a business, could you survive if they cut down your business to only 10% of its former size? Could you survive on your wages if you only get 10% of your current wages? That's what they've been fighting for a long time here. And there's a project that we found at InfoWars.com. There's a connection between Harry Reid, his son Roy Reid, who's a lobbyist for ENN, that's a Chinese government-owned energy corporation. There was a very large solar power project that was going to be created in that area. And there's another solar project that has broken ground with the help of Harry Reid. And both of those were looking to use the area that the ranch is in as mitigation area. They specifically mentioned the Bundy Ranch as well as his cattle, that they had to be removed before the project could take place. The solar mitigation is kind of like carbon credits. When you have permission to use pollution somewhere else as make another area more pristine, that's what they were going to do. They were going to tear up these areas where they were doing the solar projects and say, but that's okay because we're going to make these other areas even more pristine. Some of the media has pushed back on that and said, well, that ENN project has stopped. But Harry Reid has restarted that project in the past for the ENN, and it was just his son was able to get a sweetheart deal for the Chinese on 9,000 acres that were valued just under $40 million. They got it for about $4 million. So there you go. They cut down the ranchers. 90% of their business is gone, but then they give the Chinese energy company a huge land deal for only 10% of its value.
Unbelievable, David. So Bundy and others, they stand pat, they hold their own, and the BLM agents come in, they start seizing cattle, Bundy gets upset, then what happens?
Well, things changed quite a bit from Friday to Saturday. On Friday, they were already taking down the signs that designated it as a cattle area. They had taken down a couple of signs at the entrance to the open range area. When we got there on Saturday, they had put those signs back up. What had changed? We believe that it was the revelation about Harry Reid's connections and trying to get him out of that area so they could move forward with these solar projects. What the BLM did was the sheriff contacted Mr. Bundy and said, I'd like to meet with you privately. And Mr. Bundy said, I'll meet with you publicly. So there was a huge gathering of people by Saturday because people have been traveling from all over the country. The sheriff got there and he read a press release from the BLM that said that they were going to reopen the range. They didn't say they were going to give his cattle back. They didn't say they were going to not charge him for grazing fees. What he told them was, he said, well, I want something from you. I want you to disarm these BLM agents because they had been pointing guns and sniper's nests at the people there. They'd had altercations where they had tasered people, had stuck dogs on people. As a matter of fact, just back in mid-February, two BLM agents had shot and killed a man in another area. So they had a history of violence, as we've seen in many police departments. He asked for them to be disarmed, for these checkpoints to be taken down. You got to remember, earlier in the week, they had even put up First Amendment areas, said you can only exercise your First Amendment rights in these areas. These are little tiny fenced-in areas that were miles and miles away from even the Bundy Ranch. This is out in the middle of nowhere. It's absolutely absurd that anybody would go stand inside this little area and demonstrate about anything. Totally unconstitutional. They were essentially putting in martial law without declaring it. Well, what Mr. Bundy did was he gave him an hour deadline to disarm the BLM and to get him out of there. When they didn't do that, he said, let's go get the cattle. Now, they had about 50 or so men that were mounted on horses, and everybody else got in their cars, and we drove to the area where the cattle were being held. And as we got down there on foot, we were still waiting for the cattle to get there. The BLM had some troops that were, they looked full military outfit. They had their complete military regalia with body armor, with helmets, with AR-15s. They got out with their rifles, got behind shields, got behind car doors, and started telling us to leave the area. They had a court order. They would use lethal force. They would shoot. We stood our ground, and we waited for the guys on horseback to get there. And then gradually, the crowd just calmly moved forward. And after we got, I guess, about the width of a highway away from them, because we were underneath overpasses for I-15, when we got to the width of a double-lane highway, at that point, the crowd just moved forward, and they sent somebody forward. They were very afraid at that point. They sent someone forward to talk to one of the Bundy guys and agreed to release the cattle.
Wow, that's dramatic. Now, as of right now, David, what's going on?
As of right now, there's reports that they have moved back personnel into the area. Actually, I've seen some video that appears to be that's the case. In that area where they were holding the cattle, they had a huge number of BLM agents and vehicles. We had to wait quite a long time for them to release the cattle because they wanted to get those guys out of the area first.
Yeah.
And as they shut down both sides of I-15, and as they were coming out, one person that was with me counted 82 vehicles that came out of that area. Now, I saw a video that somebody took, I think it was yesterday, showing that they were putting vehicles back into that area. So Harry Reid has said it's not over. So even though they gave their word that they were going to stop and move back, we can't really trust them on their word. Right?
So
they were just trying to de-escalate things last Saturday when they had so many people there.
All right, David, I suspect we're going to be in touch with you on this story. David Knight is an InfoWars nightly news anchor. And, of course, Alex's website, InfoWars.com. U.S. consumer prices firmed a bit in March, and a very possible sign that a disinflationary trend has run its course. Now, while the increase last month should allay concerns among some Federal Reserve officials that inflation was running too low, price pressures remain subdued enough for the U.S. Central Bank to keep interest rates near zero, at least for a while. A South Korean ship with hundreds of passengers on board sinking off the country's southwestern coast. Among the passengers, 320 were students who were traveling with several teachers to a resort island, and there are about 20 crew members on board. There is one confirmed death already there. The underwater probe being used to look for the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 back in the water now after its first attempt ended prematurely. On Monday, crews sent the probe toward the ocean floor on what was expected to be a 20-hour deployment, only to have it return in less than 8 hours after encountering waters that were beyond its 14,764-foot maximum depth. The probe found no debris during its shortened scanning session. The second mission expected to end Wednesday about 10 a.m. Eastern time. James Sanders, of course, author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800, has been with us since this mishap began on March 8th. Well, what does this tell you, James? They're still having trouble finding anything, debris, anything.
It continues to look like a misdirection campaign, you know, where look north, no, look east, no, look south.
Yeah.
Look everywhere but west, where, you know, today where you see that the over in Yemen you've got the Al-Qaeda people saying we're going to get even with the United States. Well, Yemen's in the same general area as Somalia, I mean, you know, give or take. And the plane had the ability to get to either spot. So until I see something that's, okay, there's wings, there's a tail, there's a cabin
something
on the bottom, I don't think we're going to see it because I believe this is a misdirection.
Jim, in our third and fourth hour tonight, listen to the theory of a couple of our guests. I'd like to get your take on it sometime this week, okay?
Okay, very good.
Very good. James Sanders, of course, author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800. Miley Cyrus has suffered a severe allergic reaction to antibiotics, has been hospitalized. Her Tuesday night tour concert at the Spirit Center in Kansas City, Missouri, has already been canceled. In a moment, we're going to be talking about radical remission, the 9 key factors that can make a real difference. Dr. Kelly Turner joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Kelly Turner, PhD, is a researcher, writer, speaker in the field of integrative oncology. Her specialized research focuses on the radical remission of cancer. Kelly's research included a year-long trip around the world for which she traveled to 10 countries to interview 50 holistic healers and 20 radical remission cancer survivors about their healing techniques. Since then, she has analyzed more than 1,000 cases of radical remission. In addition to her ongoing research, Dr. Turner is spearheading the Radical Remission Project, which is an interactive website collecting new cases of the radical remission and connects current cancer patients with the radical remission survivors. Dr. Kelly Turner on Coast to Coast. Hello, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good, George. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, too. You know, that's the one word that people are petrified to hear, isn't it? Cancer.
It is. It is the disease everyone fears most at this time.
Do we have cancer cells in all of us right now?
We do. Everyone has cancer in their body right now. About 400 to 500 cells are made every day. They're just bad copies, and your immune system takes care of them.
But with some people who can't fight it, something goes wrong, doesn't it?
Right. So something goes wrong where the immune system does not recognize the buildup of cancer cells over time, and eventually, sometimes over the period of 5 to 10 years even, they'll slowly build up to form a tumor.
Radical remission, what does that mean?
Well, you might know it as spontaneous remission. That's what it's been called by the medical field for the past 100 years. But it's when cancer goes away without Western medicine or after Western medicine has failed. So someone might use Western medicine to its fullest. Their doctors say there's nothing more we can do. And if they go home and turn it around, those are the people I study.
And when you say Western medicine, are you talking radiation therapy, chemotherapy?
Right. I'm talking about allopathic medicine. So the traditional standard of care is chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation.
Okay, now for radical remission, how many different types are out there?
Well, it happens, it's been reported across almost every type of cancer. So, first of all, just to say it covers, you know, covers everything from lung to pancreatic to breast, all that stuff.
Everything, okay. Mm-hmm.
When I'm looking at radical remission, I break it down into three different types. The first is people who heal without any Western medicine at all. So that's someone who's diagnosed with cancer by their doctor officially, but for their own personal reasons, they choose not to do Western medicine and they heal it using other means. The second type are people who use Western medicine to its fullest, but it doesn't work, and so they're forced to use other means. And then finally, the third type, which is a category I've just begun studying, is people who use conventional medicine and complementary medicine at the same time in order to overcome a very serious prognosis. So anything with a less than 25% five-year survival rate.
Oh, geez.
Really, I'm looking at people who survive cancer when they're not supposed to.
Define all odds, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. When any statistically unlikely cancer remission, I want to look at it.
On a 1 to 10, with 10 being the greatest kind of treatment, how would you rate the Western medicine as it attacks cancer? On a 1 to 10.
Well, I'm the first person to say that I'm not against Western medicine at all. I'm not in favor of Western medicine. So that's, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to say what people should do or should not do.
I understand.
Yeah. I'm just studying something that no one has studied for about, you know, 100 years.
See, I'm a huge booster in alternative and holistic, but I think there's a place to mix it with mainstream medicine, as I call it.
Absolutely. And everyone is different in terms of what's right for them and what's right for their body. You know, I happen to study a very unique group of people who, you know, are brave enough to say, I want to try a different way, or who are forced to try something else. But, you know, really it's always up to you to figure out what's going to be best for your particular situation.
Well, there's no question about that. Now, when you talk about radical remission and that it happens with just about every type of cancer, has it happened in cases, Kelly, where doctors would basically say, you're incurable, and then all of a sudden, this miracle, and that's what I'll call it, this miracle occurs?
Yes, that's exactly who I study, and it happens a lot, more often than we think. You know, that's precisely, someone is told by their doctor, you know, sorry, there's nothing more we can do, you have an incurable form of cancer, you should go home and put your affairs in order. Well, that's exactly who I study, because some of those people, not all of them, but some of them do go home, but instead of putting their affairs in order to prepare for death, they put their affairs in order to figure out a healing plan. And for some people, it works, and those are the people that I study.
Have you seen similarities between those people who have been cured of the nearly impossible, but they've been able to get cured, whether they do it themselves or they get help? But are there any common denominators here?
There are, and that was the point of my exploratory research. So I've been studying these cases now for 10 years, traveled around the world, studied 1,000 of these cases, and I was looking for common threats. That's the beginning of the scientific process, right? We're trying to look for hypotheses. How could these people possibly be getting well? And believe it or not, almost everyone that I've interviewed has said that I was the first person to ask them what they did to get well. So that they'll say, you know, Dr. Turner, you're the first person. My doctor was happy for me, but he didn't ask me what I did. So thank you for letting me tell you my healing story. So yes, there were common threads, what I call common healing factors. And there were over 75 of them. So lots of different things that people are doing to try to get well.
And Dr. Turner, what about regions around this planet? Any specific areas more successful with radical remission than other spots?
You know, that's an interesting question. Radical remission, by definition, occurs outside of conventional medicine. And so, you know, a lot of people in the United States are using conventional medicine when they have cancer, of course.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's that's what their doctors tell them to do, and they're worried, as they should be, and it helps a lot of people. So there are places in the world where radical remission might be happening more often, but often that's because conventional medicine isn't available. So
hold on, Kelly. Let's talk more about that on Coast to Coast as we talk about radical remission. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Kelly Turner, her book, Radical Remission. Kelly, we're talking about regions around this planet that might have higher or lower incidence of cancer and also higher incidence of radical remission. Let's get back into that. Are there any?
Well, the problem, George, is that it's very hard to track radical remission cases because they are not tracked in our National Cancer Registry. So it's very hard to know how often these, you know, these radical remissions are even happening. Yeah. That being said, I certainly, in my research, have come across some regions of the world where some exciting things are happening in integrative oncology and also just in alternative medicine. So I was very excited to see what was happening in Japan in integrative oncology, and then other areas of the world. You know, South America has some interesting plant medicine going on for cancer. I mean, just really some interesting things happening in other areas of the world where they're more open to studying non-pharmaceutical options.
You, with about 1,000 documented cases of radical remission, you would think mainstream medicine would take heed and start saying something about it, but they really don't, do they?
You know, they don't. These cases are really ignored, which is why I started studying them. So two reasons that I can think of for that to happen. First is that doctors can't explain these cases. You know, like you call them miracle cases.
Yeah.
Doctors call them spontaneous remissions. I call them radical remissions. But it's very hard to study something that is outside of your box of understanding, right? By definition, these remissions are happening without being able to be explained by Western medicine. So why would a Western medicine doctor, you know, abandon everything and jump into studying something they can't explain, right? Most of them just shrug their shoulders and say, I'm happy for you. And then they go back to their practice. The other reason is that, like I said, these cases aren't tracked. So there's no registry to say this person healed without Western medicine. Our registries only track people who are using the standard of care.
Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs, of course, founder of Apple Computer with Steve Wozniak, died, of course, of cancer. And I guess for the better part of it, he went holistic. Was that a smart thing for him to do?
It was his choice, definitely. He had a very serious prognosis. You know, pancreatic cancer is one of our most lethal forms of cancer at the moment because we don't have good chemotherapy for it. It's hard for me to assess what Mr. Jobs did because a lot of his protocol has been kept private. So it's hard to know what he did or didn't do or if it, you know, if it was the best thing for him or not.
Yeah.
But he's a very smart man. I'm sure he tried everything he could.
Well, which is something, I guess, that's difficult for people as they try to balance how do they want to handle this, what do they do. So you have, as you say, 9 key factors that can make a difference for those with cancer. Do you want to run through them real quickly for us?
Sure, yeah. And these are the 9 factors that have emerged from the people that I study. So I'm always quick to say my research is exploratory. These are not guarantees. They are just... all we can say is that these are the 9 things radical remission survivors have done to get well. Whether or not they are generalizable to other people, we still need to do a lot more research before we can say that. But yeah, the 9 most common factors that I found are radically changing your diet, taking herbs and supplements, and then the other 7, believe it or not, are mental and emotional. So I'll run through those 7.
Sure.
Taking control of your health. Following your intuition, which surprised me, that one. Releasing suppressed emotions, increasing positive emotions, embracing the social support, the love that you receive from friends and family, deepening your spiritual practice, and finally having strong reasons for living.
Attitude is critical then, isn't it?
Apparently so. I mean, the fact that 7 of the 9 most common factors among the people that I study are mental and emotional seems to indicate that the mind is a lot more powerful in your health than you think. Now, that being said, these people, many of them had taken Western medicine to its fullest. So they had tried all the drugs. They had tried all the surgery and the chemotherapy. I had one young man who was diagnosed in his early 20s with inoperable brain cancer, and he took as much radiation as was legally allowable. And his doctor said, we can't give you any more. We're not allowed to.
Right.
There's nothing more we can do. So, you know, often these people have to turn to things like the mind, like spirituality, herbs and supplements, because they've tried everything else.
I'm a big booster on supplements. I'm a booster on turmeric, for example, Kelly. More studies keep coming out saying that it helps fight cancer, that it's there. I was at the City of Hope a year and a half ago, and I was mentioning to one main researcher there about that spice, and she didn't know about it. And she started looking into it. And I bet the more she has dived into it now, the more she's saying, this is amazing.
Yeah, I'm surprised she hadn't heard of it, because City of Hope is really forward-thinking. Yeah, the whole curcumin family of spices has been shown now in study after study, and these are, you know, randomized trials, to really have cancer-fighting properties. So, and we look at other countries like India, which uses a lot of these spices daily. Now, they have, you know, lower cancer rates in some ways, but they also have, you know, they aren't living quite as long. They don't have as long of a life expectancy. So it's hard to compare and say, well, that it's the turmeric that's making them have lower rates. But certainly the supplements, natural herbs and supplements, are being used all around the world to try to boost the immune system and detoxify the body.
Let's use some examples, Kelly, if you have any in your little repertoire there that you might be able to pull out of how diet, for example, how attitude helped any particular patient.
Sure. Well, a nice example I have for diet is this wonderful man named John, and that's his real name. He's allowed me to use his real name. And he had tried conventional medicine to its fullest for his prostate cancer. He actually had his prostate completely surgically removed and had tried chemotherapy and radiation and hormone therapy. And his cancer just kept coming back. His PSA number, which is the tumor marker used for prostate cancer, just kept climbing. And so John went to the bookstore to look for a book about how you die, because he was ready to throw in the towel, right? And he just happened to stumble across a book about using nutrition to help battle cancer. And he thought, oh, what the heck? Oh, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well pick this book up. So he picked that book up and started radically changing his diet. For him, that meant greatly increasing fruits and vegetables, and I mean greatly, like 15 to 20 servings a day. He cut out things like meat, wheat, sweets, and dairy. He started drinking a lot of filtered water, and he made sure that when he did buy the fruits and vegetables, they were organic. And what he noticed is that when he was on this new diet, his PSA started to go down. And when he went off the diet, because he was checking his PSA really regularly, it would go back up. So he's now been able to control his diet, and it's been more than 5 years now, control his cancer with diet alone. So for him, that worked. Now, it doesn't work for everyone, but it worked for him, and it worked for the survivors that I study, changing their diet in this way.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, you are what you eat. You know, your cells are formed based on the nutrients that your body derives from the food you give it. So making sure we're eating chemical-free food, we're getting lots of nutrient-rich food, which we get when we eat fresh fruits and vegetables, is really important for how our bodies operate.
Tell me then about your Radical Remission Project. Exactly what is that? It's ongoing, no doubt.
It is. Well, it's radicalremission.com. That's where people can find it. And it's my way of trying to get a better understanding of how often these radical remissions are happening. Like I said earlier, they're not tracked anywhere. And the only way that we can find out about them officially is if a doctor takes about 40 hours of unpaid time to write up a case report and submit it for publication. And doctors just don't have that kind of time. So at radicalremission.com, I've set up a very easy survey that people can take to tell me their radical remission story. And then me and my team of researchers can analyze it and work on learning from it.
Now, with this 10-year investigation, that's a long, long time, Kelly. What? Yeah. Why did it last so long?
Well, you know, when you're doing a PhD in anything, it takes a long time. But I wanted to really get into this. I'm one of the only few people on this planet who's looking into these from a scientific viewpoint, you know, really taking time to look at these cases scientifically. And it takes a long time because there's so much to learn from these people. You know, my interviews are typically 1 to 3 hours, and I'm the first person these people have talked to, so they tell me everything, right? They say what they ate, the herbs that they took, how they changed their attitude. It takes a long time to interview these people and transcribe it and look for common threads and really analyze all the cases.
It's amazing work. And around this planet, how many people are doing work like this?
You know, I only know of about 4 other researchers.
That's it?
Yeah. 4 other researchers who have published routinely on this topic. There's some doctors who put out a case report, you know, once in their career, and I'm so grateful they do that. You know, that's where we get these 1,000 published case reports. But in my estimation, for every case that's published, there are 100 more that go unpublished. And all of the research that I've done in the past 10 years has been on unpublished cases.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Your website, drkellyturner.com, with Dr. drkellyturner.com. What has been the reaction to your peers, to other doctors, to oncologists, to your work?
Most of them have been supportive and curious, which has been nice because I was expecting a lot of pushback. Most of the doctors I talk to say, thank you for investigating this, because I had one of those cases in my practice, but I didn't have the time to really look into it. So thank you for finally looking into this. Other people are naturally a little hesitant because they don't want to raise false hope. And it's something to talk about, and I actually talk about it on page 2 of my book, this idea of false hope. It's certainly not my intention in studying these amazing cases of recovery to raise false hope. What I'm trying to do is learn about healing, because we're all trying to win the war on cancer. But if we don't talk to those people who've actually won, we're missing out on an incredible opportunity to learn about how to heal from cancer. So it just makes common sense to talk to these people.
It's the old-time shamans. Were they experts in battling illnesses like cancer?
Well, I did go and talk to shamans and alternative cancer healers from around the world. And one of the reasons I did that is because, by definition, radical remission happens outside of conventional medicine. So it makes sense to talk to non-conventional healers to see what they think about cancer. And some of them are having success, absolutely. They're using things like energy medicine. They're working on emotional release. They're doing herbs and supplements. And some of them are having success, especially after Western medicine failed.
When it does fail, does it fail in a big way? I mean, obviously the patient ends up dying, but how quickly does it just collapse?
Well, that depends on your type of cancer, of course. But, you know, Western medicine, conventional medicine, really, you know, works hard to try to save people. And that's an amazing thing, that they really don't give up. So many of the people that I study, by the time their doctors say that there's nothing more they can do, they've tried their hardest. And usually that means that there's only about 3 months left. So many of the people that I study were given three to six months to live, were sent home on hospice, and then they have to quickly turn things around. That being said, they did start to turn things around right away, but they didn't necessarily heal until a year or two later. So I think a lot of people think that spontaneous remissions happen overnight. And in my research, what I found is these people are working really hard. It's not spontaneous. It's not by accident. And it usually happens over a course of a year or two for them to fully get into remission.
What do you think about people like John of God in Brazil?
I went to John of God. He was one of the healers that I wanted to see in person, because so many people who were saying, oh, I've heard of radical remission. My friend went to see a person named John of God. You know, his name just kept coming up over and over again. He was even, you know, featured on the Oprah show. So
yeah.
I wanted to go see what this was all about, and I spent 4 weeks down there in Abidjan, Brazil. And what I can say from, you know, my personal research down there is that there's a lot of energy that's happening down there. And the energy, I personally felt it, and I'm not, you know, I'm a researcher, so I'm not, you know, I try to do yoga, and especially after this research, I try to meditate, but mm-hmm. back then I wasn't a big meditator, but it's like a force field that's around his little center, and when you get within 2 blocks of it, you can feel it. It's pretty crazy.
What do you think it all is now? Let's assume that this works. Mm-hmm. And that somehow positive thinking and all these other techniques seem to tap into it, and it battles cancer and does other things. But what do you think it is?
I think it's the immune system. And that's my analysis after hearing that over and over again from the people that I study. They all said that they got their own immune system to work on the cancer. So they got their immune system really strong and really active. So I think whether, you know, when we have 5 minutes of joy, and again, it's not positive attitude all the time, even 5 minutes a day is what the people used to try to get well. 5 minutes of, you know, uncontrollable laughter or 5 minutes of pure gratitude floods your entire bloodstream with very powerful immune boosting hormones. So we have our biggest pharmacy is right here in our brains, in these master glands, these mixologists. And they can release a flood of hormones like oxytocin and serotonin and relaxin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And these have been shown to increase natural killer cells.
Do you think, though, that there is some kind of, you know, you mentioned the force around John of God's area, but that there is some kind of energy force out there that we tap into that, it maybe is not the body's immune system, but it's a catalyst to get everything started again. But it's out there. It's out there for all of us to tap into. Maybe it's God-given. I don't know.
Certainly the people that I study have said, yes, there is a force field that you can tap into to help your immune system, sort of like plugging in your batteries. And that's discussed in my Deepening Your Spirituality, Deepening Your Spiritual Connection chapter. So a lot of people think that, you know, healing through spirituality is a matter of what you believe in, right? Are you believing hard enough? Well, the people that I study, that wasn't the case. What they were doing was practicing daily, and they had a daily connection practice, whether it was meditation or prayer or walking in nature. They did something to kind of tap into that force field that, you know, you could call it force field, you could call it divine energy, you could call it theta waves in your brain, you know, brain waves, whatever you want to call it. You can call it something religious or not, but there is a state that you can tap into and you can get your body into that is incredibly healing.
That to me is the most radical, the most exciting aspect of all of this, this tapping in ability.
Mm-hmm.
With some of these techniques. If, God forbid, Kelly, you came down with cancer, mm-hmm. would you do mainstream medicine, as I call it, and the holistic?
That would depend entirely on what kind of cancer I had and how far along it was. So with certain cancers, I would absolutely do surgery and chemo and all these other 9 factors in conjunction, you know, at the same time. If I had, you know, a very early stage cancer that wasn't dangerous, then I would start with these 9 factors and I would keep chemotherapy in my back pocket.
Monitor. Okay, we're going to take phone calls with you, Kelly, when we come right back, or perhaps you want to share your story with us. Dr. Kelly Turner with us on Coast to Coast AM.